Okay, good morning, everybody. Thank you to Rabbi Reingold and to the yeshiva, to the Kol Zachanam for inviting me to say this year. I think you know the answer to the questions that you saw. You know, snowing outside, so I didn't back out of my verbal agreement to give this year, and you didn't back out on coming, so I think you see that a verbal agreement in halacha certainly has some heavy-duty commitments. But fundamentally, the shilas that we'd like to discuss this morning and try to come up with a approach is understanding what a verbal agreement is, and if indeed a verbal agreement in halacha has some form of a binding commitment to it. You'll see some of the questions that I penned on the Mar Makomos page essentially speak to a employer-employee arrangement agreement that is based upon a verbal agreement. Parents hire a babysitter to come, and the babysitter agrees to come, and one reason or the other, the babysitter decides to renege or to back out, or the parents, the employers, decide to back out. Now, clearly, if any form of a kinyan is made, and a real transaction is made, that means the classic kinyan that we talk about, typically kesef, or if there's a shtar, if there's a contract, if there's some sort of absolutely understandable, halakhically binding commitment, a kinyan, then at that particular point, all bets are off, we have to go on to a different set of halachos. What we're going to talk about this morning is pre-kinyanim. Post-kinyanim, there's a different set of halachos. We're also not going to discuss a situation where the employee already went to work, already traveled to work, or if the employee already is in the process of working. At that stand also, there's also a different set of halachas that take place as well. So the issue that we're going to deal specifically this morning is prior to any form of kinyan taking place, prior to what we call haschalas malach, or prior to a case of holchu, where the employees actually were on their way to work. What also we have to mention at the outset as a hanacha, and this is very, very much discussed in contemporary literature, is the issue of a minug. Minug, you know, carries a lot of weight, specifically in the area of Chosha Mishpat. If there's an understanding, even though there's not necessarily a halachic agreement about it, that also has to be taken into account. So if a particular area of business or a particular field, there's a particular understanding that a verbal agreement indeed carries with it significance equivalent to that of a contract, that also is going to be taken into account very, very seriously. Now, the cases that I discussed here, typically when you're dealing with babysitters and parents or the gamut of different situations, a taxi driver doesn't come, when you order the taxi driver, it comes late, and you decide that you want to call another taxi driver. If there's not necessarily understanding in the business world as to what you do in that particular situation, then we're going to deal with the halachas that we're talking about today. But if there is a particular minhag regarding that situation, then the minhag carries the day and it trumps the halacha. Famously, Chazal said, it's a Gemara, it's a Mishnah, Masechah Sofrim, Minug Mevatel Halach. Anytime there's a Minug regarding financial agreements or any fiduciary responsibilities that exist, those areas and those Minhagim carry the day. Let's start with the Mishnah, which is the opening Mishnah, the sixth parak of Masechah Bava Metzia, that speaks to verbal agreements. The Gemara says as follows, the Mishnah says as follows, Hasocher sa umnin, a employer hires umnin, hires employees, laborers, v'hitu ze'ezeh. So hitu is a difficult word to translate. Rashi tells you, look in the Gemara if you want to know what hitu means, but we're going to go with the second understanding of the Gemara of hitu, that means chazru, that the employer goes back or reneges on his commitment, or the employee reneges on his commitment. So hitu here means chazur, and you'll see the second source in the Gemara understands hitu to mean chazur. So let's say the employer goes back on the employee's agreement, or the employee goes back on the word of the employer. Ein lahem ze al ze tarumos. So a tarumos literally means
ela tarumos.
The only taina, the only item that is holding back this agreement is the fact that there's a tarumos. What is a tarumos? A tarumos you could translate as a complaint or as a taina, but it's not financially binding. A tarumos simply means that I'm upset at you or I'm angry at you. I have a complaint against you because you didn't come to work. Or the employee says, you backed out of me and I have a complaint against you for backing out against me. So if anybody is chozer, that means the employee is chozer, or if the employer is chozer, there's nothing financially binding. So you see at the outset, a verbal agreement seems to carry no weight whatsoever. The only thing that it does carry is a tarumos, that I could complain against you and you could complain against me, whoever went back on the deal. Now, the Mishnah gives a few examples when a employee backs out on his employer, and these are situations where a taromes, a complaint can exist against the employer for backing out on the deal. Sachar sachamar v'sakeda lahavi freifrin v'chalilin lakala ulames. The Mishnah talks about hiring day laborers, donkeys, to carry a variety of different things, to take you to a particular place. You are hired as a day laborer to bring these items, flutes or different types of wood. You brought it either to the kala or to mace to eulogize. A flute was used, or to be mesmeh chasam kala, a flute was used, and the employee doesn't do his job and does not bring the flutes in time for the chasam. The chasam is slated for 6 o'clock, and for whatever reason, he doesn't bring it all together. Or if he brings it, he brings it too late. Oh, po'alim lahalos pishtanim in a mishra. Let's say you hire employees to take or remove flax out of the place where it's sitting in the water. The kol davar she'avad, or any aspect that employee is hired to do in a situation that's going to cause a financial loss to the employer, and the employees don't do what they're supposed to do, makom she'ein sham adam, in a situation where there's no other employee to hire in that particular circumstance to fill in, to remove the flax or to bring the flutes or to bring the wood to the employer, there are two options that the employer has. Number one, he doesn't have a financial claim on him because it's only a taromis, it's only a verbal agreement. But if it's a davar she'avad, if it's a financial loss, or it's a situation where there's not going to be the ability to the employer to make the money that he expected to make, the employer has two strategies that he's able to employ. Number one is socher alein. He can find other employees, and he could hike up the price if the employees want to hike up the price for the particular job. Say, you hired somebody to bring the flutes to the wedding for $10, and now you have an employee sitting here on the bench ready to get to work, but he says, I'll do it for $20. So now, I only expected to pay $10. Now, you're coming, you want $20. The rule is the employer is permitted to hire the second person for $20. He lost $10. He can charge that to the first employee who was supposed to work for him. So socher alein means that the first employee is going to get a financial loss. Now, it's only a verbal agreement. Didn't we just explain that a verbal agreement does not carry any weight and it's not binding? That's true that it doesn't carry any weight when there's no financial loss. But when there's a financial loss in the employer-employee relationship, the employee can be held accountable if it's going to cause the employer financial loss. So what can he do? He can hike up the price, or he can charge a higher price, or the second employee who wants more money can take that amount of money, and then you go back to employee A, say, you didn't come. I expected you to come. I was only able to find another employee for a higher price, and I took that employee to do the job. Therefore, you owe me $10. That's option number one. Option number two, I see got cut off. I didn't copy and paste correctly. Sochem o mitayin. Mitayin means that you could actually trick, or you could fool the first employer. You can say, you don't want to come. Listen here, I'm so worth it for you because you know what? I'm not going to just give you $10 to carry the flutes to the wedding. I'm going to carry for you $20 or $25 to carry the flutes to the wedding. And the employee says, wow, that's a bargain. And he does it. He goes. And then the employer comes back and says, I was just fooling you. You made a verbal agreement. You made a verbal commitment. When you backed out of your verbal commitment, that was going to cause me a financial loss. I had nobody else to hire. I'm permitted to fool you to come to do the job, and that is absolutely permitted. I don't want to get into the halachas of Sheker and how this works, but there's a lot of discussion about the halacha mitayin. This is Paskin and Shulchan Aruch, halacha lemaisa, that an employer is able to fool or to trick the employee who causes him financial harm. Again, you have to put yourself in the eyes of the employer here. The employer is waiting to make a significant business transaction. He sees that he's going to lose out. It could be an expensive job. I'm talking about $10 or $20. We're talking about $100,000, $200,000, and the person doesn't come to work. You're permitted to fool him and to up the price and tell him that you didn't come. I'm going to fool you, and only after do you tell him they actually fooled him. You're not going to tell him you fooled him before, because then he's not going to come. But in that circumstance, the Mishnah gives us two options. So just to recap, in terms of what the Mishnah says, the Mishnah's focus here is when an employer and employee back out on a verbal agreement. Now, the focus of the Mishnah is more so when the employee backs out, right? He doesn't come to work, he doesn't bring the chalilin, he doesn't bring the freifrin, he doesn't do what he's supposed to do. So the Mishnah says, says very, very clearly that he's not held accountable. The employee can back out of any verbal agreement. The exception to the rule is if there is a financial loss to the employer if you don't come to work. So if there's a financial loss to the employer if you don't come to work, the first thing that you should do is try to hire somebody else. That's what the Mishnah says. Makom shein sham adam. If there's nobody else, then you could go to the course of action of fooling him, tricking him, or hiking up the price. But if there's somebody else sitting there and that person will do the job just as well or equally good and he can come, that's the best thing to do. So the focus really of the Mishnah is when an employee backs out. We haven't yet dealt with an employer necessarily backing out. Yeah?
Because this whole premise is on the concept of a complaint. What would constitute a complaint that we're talking about?
The complaint is you didn't come to work. We made a deal.
No. But if the employee has a reason which is not financial.
Okay, good. You want to know what's a valid reason for an employee to back out?
Right. That's your question. It may not necessarily be financial.
Okay, so if you saw the questions that we asked, some of those questions indeed dealt with a situation where the employee has a valid reason. In case number two that I wrote, Shimon verbally agrees to take a job working for Levi. Shortly before beginning employment, Shimon realizes that he's not interested in the job. So Shimon makes a verbal agreement. He agrees to go to work for Levi. But then for whatever reason, he says, nah, this is not for me. Not because I'm not cut out for it, but I don't feel like doing it. Is Shimon permitted to back out? Now, he has a reason. He's not interested in going. Do you call that a valid reason? Now, again, there's not necessarily at this point an algorithm to explain when and how or what level of complaint there is. But I will get...
Because the employer is permitted to trick.
Yeah.
So, for example, let's take the second, babysitter. I agree. I find out, for whatever reason, the kids aren't as well-behaved as I thought.
Good.
They were. So I back out.
We're going to talk about that case. Okay. And that's really 2B.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. I'm happy you're clarifying. In 2B, soon after hiring Shimon, I went the other way. Okay. Levi hears a rumor that Shimon is not trustworthy.
Okay.
Is Levi permitted to back out of his agreement to Shimon? Now, they made a verbal agreement, but now he hears something about his employee. Could he back out?
What's the
nachman for Taromas? It's a good question. Mishael Salanter addresses that.
Who is a lesser thing?
So Mishael Salanter says you can never have a Taromas on anybody. Lalacha, you can't say I have a Taromas here. I'm a complaint against you. The only time you can is when the Gemara and the Mishnah says that you can have a Taromas.
Is that private or public?
What's that?
Private or public?
You're saying could I put up a pachkavilia about my complaint against him? It's a good question. I would assume not. I don't think that's if it doesn't have something to do with the tzibur, then not. If it would have something to do with the tzibur, probably the best thing to do would be to bring it to Beis Din, and Beis Din would have to decide whether or not this is something that's a mikshel for the rabbim, and then the Beis Din would have to decide if this is something that we have to put out because Shimon is fooling and confusing the town.
But he did it more than once.
Yeah, especially if he did it once. So that becomes an issue that Beis Din has to decide upon. But in a situation where two people have an issue with each other and they get in a fight, and there's a valid reason, al pi halacha, to have a taromas, Rabbi Shlomo Salanter says you're permitted to have a taromas, and maybe even more than that, you don't have to be mochalim. The halacha is on Erev Yom Kippur, you have to be ask mechila, and you have to be mochal. But let's say you have a valid taromas against the guy, the employee doesn't come, and there's a hefsid moment, and I couldn't find anybody, and I lost out from you. So when the Mishnah says that I'm permitted to have a taromas, I don't have to be mochal that person.
So all it is just a personal
taina. A personal
taina. Otherwise, not a real
nafkamina. But that's a big nafkamina. I don't have to be mochel or I don't have to ask mechila or I don't have to forgive somebody. That's a significant thing. Or I could have a complaint against somebody. As Jews, we like to wipe clear or wipe our slates clean. That we don't have issues with another person. But the halacha tells me that sometimes I can have a valid issue with somebody. So the Mishnah clearly has the focus of discussing when the employee backs out. Now, the Mishnah didn't deal with an employer backing out. That the Gemara is going to address. In the second source, what happens if the employer backs out? So take a look at the Gemara. The Gemara first explains the Mishnah the way I explained it, which is the Ibai Yisayim, which is the second opinion of how to understand Hitu. And the Gemara says, Ibai Yisayim, Hai Tana Chazru, Nami Hitu Karile. The definition of the word Hitu is chazru, that one person, either the employee or the employer, backed out on their verbal agreement. The Tanya, the Braisa says, Hasocher es ha'umnin, v'hitu es balabais, if the employee fools the employer, the sochir fools the balabais, o balabais hita osan, or the owner or the employee fools or confuses or tricks the employee, ein lehem zel zet taromas, there's no claim or complaint that any party could have against the other. Now what the Gemara is going to do, the Gemara is going to give a three or four different caveats to explain when this applies. The first two are talking about a situation where the employee never went to work. The Gemara says he never left town to go to work. If he left town to go to work, all bets are off, and it's a different set of halakos. So with the case that we're pinning, or that we're putting in a vacuum, is a situation where the employee never went to work, and that's when you only have a situation called a taromes, a complaint, and there's no financial obligation that rests upon the employee or the employer. Case number two, the Gemara says, just to save us a little bit of time, and I'm not going to read through the entire Gemara, the Gemara says, there's a second situation where the employee cannot have a taina on the employer, and that's when only it's a taromas again, but the person didn't actually go to work. When he only left to work, he's on his way, or if he goes and he's traveling to pick up tools or supplies that he needs, that's called holchu. When he gets to the workplace and actually starts being involved or engaging in labor, that's called holchu. That's not called holchu, that's called hischilu b'malacha. So in those two circumstances, that's nothing to do with taromas. That's a whole different set of halachos. The guy's working. The guy left to work. In that circumstance or in that situation, we're going to have to deal with a different set of halachos. That's where their kinyan was already established. Holchu or hischilu b'malacha is some form of a kinyan, similar maybe to a shtar, similarly, possibly to any type of valid halachic kinyan. So in those circumstances, the Gemara is not dealing with a taromas. What is the Gemara dealing with? When there's never a situation of a hischilu b'malacha or holchu l'malacha. The Gemara has the third caveat. When there's a financial loss, as we discussed in the Mishnah, the Gemara fleshes this out, if there's financial loss, even if there's no holchu, or if there's no hischilu b'malacha, if there's just a binding verbal agreement in a situation where it's a verbal agreement but there's financial loss, then I could have a claim against you, employee to employer, or employee to employer. The fourth situation that the Gemara has, and this really the Gemara speaks about as well, is if there's somebody else to hire. The employer can hire somebody else at the same moment. Even though the employee's backed out, that's his first situation that he has to do. He can't turn to a situation to hike up the price on a second employee and charge the first employee, and he can't fool the first employee, as long as there's somebody else there. But if there's nobody else there, then all bets are off. So the Gemara really speaks about the Mishnah, or explains the Mishnah, I hope, the way I describe the Mishnah at greater length to you. So to review, what we really have is a situation where there's only a question of a verbal agreement, there's no hischilu b'malacha, there's no beginning of work, there's no holchu b'malacha, and the only situation that we have when a verbal agreement is binding is when there is a financial loss to the employer or to the employee, and as well at the same time, if there's somebody else that you could hire when there's a verbal agreement, I shouldn't kick back to hiking up the price or to fooling the employee, I should try to hire somebody else first. The Rishonim here, and I quoted Tosfos in the third source and the Muki Yosef in the first source, but really all the Rishonim, Rabbah, the Ramban, the Rush, all the Gedolim Rishonim here in the beginning of Maseches Bava Metzia in the sixth parak, ask the following question. They explain that in the case in the Gemara that we dealt with, when the employee goes to work, or the employee actually engages and begins and starts work, we say that in that case, the employee has a financial binding obligation to the employer. As long as he started work or as long as he went to work. Asks the Rishonim, that's not fair. Let's say I made a deal with you. I hire the employee. I'm the employer, I hire the employee. And the employee says, I'm ready to get to work. And as a result of him taking the position and agreeing to go to work for the employer, he loses another job. Or he can't go to work for somebody else the next day, the next 2 days. Isn't that also binding upon the employer to be held accountable in that situation? Now, there's no kinyan, there's no holchu l'malacha, there's no hischilu b'malacha. But what there is a verbal agreement that is also financially aggravating or causing a financial loss to the employee. Now, remember, the Mishnah said that if the employee causes a financial harm to the employer, in a situation where there's no verbal agreement, the employee is held accountable. And the verbal agreement is binding in that situation because now the employer doesn't have the chalilin for the chasna, or he doesn't have the freifrin, he doesn't have whatever he needs. So why, when it comes to the Mishnah, is an employee held accountable for a verbal agreement when there's financial loss, and the Gemara never explains here that there should be a financial accountability for the employer if the employee doesn't come to work, or vice versa, when the employee is unable to do what he is supposed to do and is unable to perform as a result of being hired out and he can't go do a job somewhere else, the employer should also be held accountable. That is the question that the Rishonim ask. Take a look. The way Tosfos asks this is based upon a concept called garmi. Garmi is a form of damage. It's not a direct damage. It's not a grumma. It's not indirect damage. But we'll try to explain a little bit better today, time permitting, what exactly garmi is. But take a look in the second line in Tosfos. Tosfos on the bottom of the first page asks, Im kein, amai lo yitilam kapoa batel. If I hire an employee to come to work for me, and the employee doesn't come to work as a result of the employer telling him, don't come anymore, I'm not interested in you coming, amai lo yitilam kapoa batel. He should really pay him like a worker who is unable to find a job. Kevan shal yadu nispatlu oso hayom, because now I don't have any work. It's true I didn't go to work. It's true I didn't start the job. But the fact that I agreed to work for you today means that I didn't work for somebody else. And you, Mr. Employer, hired me, and now you're backing out of me. Now I don't have any work today or tomorrow. How are you going to tell me that I'm not held accountable? How can the employer not be held accountable? That's the question on the Rishonim. Tosfos asks it from the point of Garmi. V'yesh Lomar, says Tosfos, the second line in Tosfos in the third source, Demayri kishechozer bo od yimtzu lehistaker. You know why you're not held accountable, Mr. Employer? Not held accountable because you can still get a job. The employee can still find another job. He still has a way out. He's not bound to the employer so significantly that he can't find another job. He does have another job, and he will find that other job. But you still can have a legally binding complaint against the employer, because now I have to work hard to go find the job. I was settled last night. I went to sleep at 11 o'clock, and I knew I had a job tomorrow morning at 8:30. Now, you tell me early in the morning at 7 o'clock that you don't have a job anymore, but I can find another job by 8 o'clock. So the halacha is, you'll take that other job. The employer is not held accountable financially, but you can, employee can have a verbal complaint against that employer for backing out on him so late in the game. And now he has to work hard, and he only has an hour to scramble to find the job. It's 7:30, it's 8:30, I'm supposed to start getting paid in an hour. The employer just dumped me, I gotta go find another job. I can have a complaint against you, Mr. Employer, for dumping or backing out of me so late in the game. It says, Tosus explains, Chimaflik b'samach bein lo holchu, hachamorim lo holchu. So if that's the case, that it doesn't make a difference if you actually go to work or start work or if you don't start work, says Tosfos, really the distinction here is, can I get another job or can I not get another job? Is there potential for me to get hired out or not? It has nothing to do with whether I go to work or whether I don't go to work. Why the Gemara uses the language of holchu or hischilu bimlacha is because commonly or typically speaking, once I'm on my way to go do the job, or once I'm in the position or place where I'm working for the employer, the likelihood of me getting another job is significantly less, as opposed to earlier in the day where I don't yet go to the place of work of the employer or of on my way to pick up supplies for the employer. At that point, the likelihood of me getting a job is significantly higher. So Tosfos' position here, and this you don't find in the Gemara, is a very, very important opinion, Allah Allah, it's going to be brought, is that employer can be held accountable in a situation even when the employee doesn't begin work, or even when the employee doesn't go to the place of work yet. And that's in a situation where the employee is now and is stuck, and we can't find another job. So if a situation arises where you're hired verbally by somebody, and as a result you say no to another job, the employer is not held accountable financially if you can find another job. The employee can find another job. If the employee can't find another job, you could have a financial complaint against the employer.
Where after the other job the employee finds is pays less than
the first. That the Gemara addresses directly in the Pasuk Shulchan Aruch, you have to play the difference in price. So the employee here, you see, is similar to the employer, that in a situation where I can get another job or find another job as the employee, I should find another job. Now, if the situation is one that I had to work harder to find that job, I can absolutely have a taromis. I can have a complaint against the employer. I can't have a financial complaint against them, but I can have a financial complaint against the employer if I'm in a situation where I can't find another job anymore. Now, that, by the way, the Gemara doesn't tell us. That's the Chiddush of the Rishonim here. The Gemara only tells me that the only time the employer is held accountable for the employee's loss of work is when he's on his way to work or when he actually starts working. But now the Rishonim explained that there has to be an even playing field between an employer who backs out and an employee who backs out. Just like the Mishnah tells me that if an employee backs out on the employer and it causes financial hardship to the employer and there is no other employee to hire, I'm able to taina and I'm able to charge the employee the price that it costs me to hire the other worker, or I can fool the first employee to come and work for me. The same thing is true in the other way, where the employer backs out on the employee. In that situation, the employee is permitted to, if in a situation where he can't find another job, the employee is permitted to have a legal or halachic monetary complaint against the employer.
And the parameters for not being able to find another job, that's objective?
Okay, so it's also a very good question. You're asking both a very similar question. What we'll try to get to that at the end in terms of various cases, what is considered to be a fair expectation for the employee to try to find another job, and what's a fair expectation for the employer to find another job, right? The case that we had, the employer hires the babysitter for a 7 o'clock date, and it's 4 o'clock now. So how responsible should the parents be in terms of trying to find somebody else? This is a wedding that they have to go to. It's their neighbor's kid's wedding. And they have to be there. Maybe even I have a brach under the chuppah. I don't know. But it's a loss. And my being there is not necessarily, when we talk about loss, by the way, the Rishonim explained, Tosa says this as well in Daf Ayin Vav, we're not just talking about financial loss. We're talking about a loss that has an effect on a different level as well. Anything that has to be taken care of immediately, when there's an immediate need, that's called a loss. Even though it's not financial. Lost. If I can't go to the wedding, I'm stuck. So how much or how hard do Mr. and Mrs. Cohen have to work now to make phone calls to find another babysitter? Do they have to call 2 babysitters? Do they have to call 5 babysitters? Do they have to call 10 babysitters? That's not easy. When the employee backs out, when the employer backs out on the employee, says, sorry, I don't need you anymore. So how much work does the employee have to, how many phone calls does the employee have to make? How many, how much does he have to post online that he is available for work? It's not simple, and each and every situation will have a different hashlach, a different application, halach l'mais, of how to go. We're supposed to end at 10:30, so I'm going to skip a few sources here to try to get to more... To round the issue out and to make sure that we're finished in time. If you skip down to the bottom of the second page, the Shulchan Aruch, based upon our discussion till this point, Paskins like Tosfos, Paskins like the Mishnah, in each of the situations of an employer backing out or an employee backing out. Let's go through the Psak Halach and the Shulchan Aruch, and we'll try to explain or speak out in terms of the practical ramifications of dealing with situations that come up in the workplace or at home, etc. The Shulchan Aruch in Simon Shin Lamed Gimel, that's Hilchos Skiros Palim, Sif Aleph, Paskins as follows. Hasocher Sapalim, Vehitos Balabais, if you hire employees, and the employee backs out on the employer, or bal habayis ita osam, or the employer backs out on the employee. Ein lahem ze al ze ta'arumos. The only thing that is binding as a result of the backing out is a complaint. That's what we say, right? That's step one. So step one is that nothing is binding halachically. A verbal commitment and a verbal agreement does not carry any monetary significance or any monetary complaint against the other guy. That's where we start at first base. Our home plate is taromes is the only thing that you could have against somebody that backs out. Now you'll get into a number of caveats of when that's not true. But the starting point is a verbal agreement and halacha does not have any binding status to it. Now, the reason for that is the Torah explains that either the poel can say to the socha, the employer can say to the employee, or the employee can say to the employer, go find work somewhere else, go fire another employee. Or the employee could say to the employer, go find somebody else to work for you. So we're not stuck, go find somebody else. Each party says to the other one, go find somebody else. So therefore, lahalacha, the only thing that you did wrong was not keeping your word. Now, a word in halacha is very significant. We don't like speaking inappropriately. And I think most of the al-chetz that we say in Yom Kippur are related to inappropriate speech. So keeping your word is very important. But it's not in respect to the financial obligation obligation that you have if you don't keep your word. It's a bad thing. You have a taromes. You might be called a machaser amana. Somebody who's not trustworthy. You might be called somebody who's mishana his das, somebody who changes his mind. And nobody wants to be in that camp. So it's not suggested to make an agreement with somebody and to back out. That's not the way the world works. It will create anarchy. It will create confusion and lack of trust and communication between employers, employees, and vice versa. The world will not be able to work. Our business world works a lot on trust. If there's no trust, the whole business erodes and corrodes. I think Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman famously said in 1929, when the Depression, that the basis for the fall of the crash was people stopped trusting each other. When you stop trusting each other, business is unable to run successfully. So here to here, halacha recognizes that it's not a good thing. And we don't want you to do it. And you can even have a complaint. You don't have to be mochel, the person. But at the same time, it's not financially binding. However, that's only true b'shelo holchu, says the Shulchan Aruch in line number two, if the employee doesn't go to the workplace yet, or if he doesn't actually start engaging in work. In those two circumstances, we'll call that a form of a kinyan. Holchu, or hischila b'mlach, is called a semi-kinyan. And as a result of the semi-kinyan, you're bound, and that sets up a whole new set of halachas. So that is halacha number one. And the Shulchan Aruch concludes in the end of Siman Aleph, that in this situation, it is only talking about when I can't hire somebody else. If I can hire somebody else, even though you started the work or you went to the melacha, if I could find somebody else to do the work, that's the first thing I should do. Take a look in Shulchan Aruch, Hosh Mishpat, Simen Shin Lama Gimel Sif Beis, Bamed Var Mamurim, another circumstance, She'en Lehem Allah of Ella Taromes Bishelo Holchu, right? The first case that we saw is also Bishelo Holchu, when you don't actually go to the workplace. Dafka Bishlohoyuchol Mahaskir Atzmam Emesh Kisisrachim Baal Baizat. This is the opinion of Tosos and the Muki Yosef, or those Rishonim, that in a situation where I can't be hired out anymore as an employee, because I'm bound to my employer and I'm no longer able to be hired out, I'm stuck and I can't find another place of employment. In that situation, I can have a financially bound legal reason to have a tain against you. Aval im hayu niskarm emesh, but if I could have been hired out yesterday, v'achshav ein niskarm klal hareze kedavra avod lahem. In a situation where I no longer can be hired out, I am the balabais, and the balabais was chozer on the poel, right? And he said, I don't need you to come to work anymore. In that situation, that's a davar ha'avod for me. That's a financial loss. I'm stuck. I can't work. I'm not going to be able to put food on the table for supper tonight. As a result, that's called a davar ha'avod, and the poel is able to have a financial claim against the baal habayis.
You know, it also makes a difference, and he could have found
job now. Yeah, the Shulchan Aruch will say that later. If I can find another job at this time as well, then that is the case as well. But here we're talking about a situation where if there's nothing left for me, but yesterday I was able to get hired out, and now I'm stuck sitting at home and sitting on the bench, and there's no way for me to find a job, then I'm in trouble. So in that circumstance, the balabais, the employer, is forced to pay the employee kipoel batel. What the salary of kipoel batel is, the Gemara and the Mishnah explain, that it's some level of half of what the expected level of payment is. If you pay $10 an hour, it's probably $5 an hour, because at the end of the day, I'm not so interested in working. So I'll be happy to sit at home, and I'll be happy to sit at home and take half the price, or take half the salary. So that's what you'd have to pay the employee. Now, there is an exception to that, and the Gemara deals with that, and we're not talking about it today. A person loves to work, and he enjoys working, and bittul, and not doing work for that person, is a financial loss for him. Who falls into that category? Who doesn't fall into the category is subject to major machlokas amongst the contemporary halachic authorities. But if a person is working and he works with his hands and works with his feet, and not working with his hands or feet or his mind, there's also a question, a rav, a rebbe, not working, being fired, is he losing out by not working? Do you have to pay more than a poel batel because he really wants to be working? That's a discussion for a different time. As you mentioned, v'mneskarim b'pachos mishalim apchas. If the employer, as a result of backing out on the employee, and now the employee can only get a lower wage for whatever he's doing, the employer has to fill the gap and fill in the price of what he would have been paid. The Shulchan Aruch continues, v'mholchu af al pishlo hayimotzi maskir atzim emesh. If the person goes to work, the employee goes to work, even though he couldn't find a job yesterday, no sinam scharm kipoel batel. The fact that you went on your way, and you went and you got in your car and you turned on the gas and you got into your car as soon as you leave your house and you're on your way to work, at that time, that is considered a halachically binding kinyan. That's called holchu. Once I'm on my way to work and the employer calls and says, sorry, no more, there's no job for you, that doesn't make a difference. Because you went to work and you started work, at that point, the employer is bound to you. But again, that's only if you can't find another job. If you can't find the job, so then you should find another job. You should take the job. The employer is not held accountable financially, but again, you can have a taromes against the person. Halacha 3 in Shulchan Aruch, without reading it, because of the time constraints, explains that in a Davar Ha'avod, on the Poel's end of things, if the Poel backs out, if the employee backs out on the employer, the same halachic status is true. Either you're able to hike up the price to hire another employee, or you can fool the first employee into coming. There's a fascinating Tshuvas Rama that we don't have time to go into regarding a Rav who was hired by a community, and prior to him leaving to go to town, the community decided to back out on his employment. Whether or not the Rav can have a financial claim against the community, the Tshuvas Rama, Pesachim Tshuva quotes it, has a discussion here whether or not, here is exactly our circumstance, where there was no contract. Contracts, I guess, were not something that were common in the times of the Rama, but nothing was in writing. But the Rav was hired, there was a verbal agreement, he was ready to head out, he didn't get in his car yet to go out, and then they call and they send him word, sorry, the deal's off. So the Rama employs many of the concepts that we just discussed this morning in terms of holchu or hischilu b'mlacha. When is a verbal agreement binding? When is it not verbal agreement binding? Is the fact that the Rav can't find another job, should you pay him like a poel batel? And the Rama employs a concept which is not for now, which is anytime a deal is made al pi harabim, the town, the community, that has a different status altogether, and it's hard to back out on a employee who is hired by the tzibur. That's not something that should be done. And then the Rama deals with whether or not the Rav is considered to be like a malamed, and whether or not the fact that a malamed, a Rebbe who's not teaching, will become weak, or he won't keep up his ability to be able to teach, whether or not the Rav passing shilas and not being able to passing shilas now, whether that also will wear down his skill set, and then you can charge the community. Let's try to put all this together and get back to the questions that we started with. And I'd like to share with you an Aruch HaShulchan, but only after we go through each of the questions, and let's conclude with that. If you see question number one on page one, Sarah agrees to babysit for the Cohen children on Sunday evening at 7 p.m. to allow the Cohens the opportunity to attend the wedding of their neighbor's child. So it's a verbal agreement. That's all it is. Sarah calls at 4 p.m. on Sunday and informs the Cohens that an old friend is in town overnight and she would prefer to spend time with the friend. Is Sarah permitted to back out on the commitment that she made? So I'll put it out to the crowd if anybody has any suggestions. Can Sarah back out? She made a verbal agreement, whether it was a week ago, 2 weeks ago, whatever it is. But now it's 4 o'clock for a 7 o'clock wedding that they have, so they have a few hours now. What are their obligations? Is Sarah permitted to back out? And can the parents have a taina on Sarah for not coming? So as we discussed, it's a verbal agreement. There's nothing signed. There's no minhag ha'ir in terms of a babysitter backing out and in terms of her not backing out. So there's no understanding necessarily of how to handle the situation. So verbal agreement to at the outset, there's nothing halachically binding. Sarah can walk away and she could say, kol tov, my friend's in town, goodbye and good luck, and I hope you have a easy time finding a babysitter. That's what she can say. However, as we discussed, this is a hefsek. This is a davar ha'avod. The parents have their best friends or their neighbors chasna for their kids. This is causing them a financial loss, not necessarily, but it's causing them an immediate loss that they can't attend the wedding. So as a result of that, Sarah is now obligated, right? Because of the fact that it's causing a hardship or an immediate need. So what is Sarah's obligation, or what is the parents' obligation? So the parents immediately, what they should try to do is find somebody else. They should try to make a call, make two calls, because that's their obligation. If we could find somebody else, if it's a dove rabbit, I should try to find somebody else. Let's say I can find somebody else. And they're stuck. And it's 5 o'clock now. And they call two or three babysitters. What could they do? Aliba de Hilchasa, they could call Sarah, or they could call another babysitter first. Which one you should do first is not simple in halacha, but you could call somebody else, and if you were paying Sarah $10 an hour, you could call up Rina and tell her to give you $20 an hour to come babysit, and the parents can now take that $10 that they charged up to Rina and charge Sarah that difference in price. That's the first thing they can do. The second thing that they can do, and you can close your eyes, some people might not like this, but they can trick Sarah. They can tell Sarah, listen, this is very important. I need you to come. And the fact that you can't come is hard for us. So listen, I'm going to give you $20. So Sarah comes, and at the end of the day, it's a three-hour babysitting job, and she says, okay, where's my $60? I say, $60? I'll give you $30. It's only 3 hours. You know what I mean? You told me $20. Sorry, I'm able to fool you, because you almost caused me harm. That is what the Cohens halachically are able to do. Hopefully, what they try to do is find somebody else in the interim. But now it's 5 o'clock, it's 5:30, they have to be at the wedding. What are they going to do? Those are their two options that they're able to put into play.
Let's sound like in our society it's a good idea. It's recommended.
I would tend to think, and I'll deal with the opposite case, and I'll try to leave us on a positive note. I've had to appreciate this. The Cohens call Sarah at 4 p.m. and tell her that they are an unusually busy day and are too tired to attend the wedding. Are the Cohens permitted to back out of the commitment that they made? Could they do that to Sarah? Sarah says, listen, Mr. and Mrs. Cohen, I said yes to you and I had three other jobs that I could have taken. I'm not happy about that. So Sarah has a legal taina against the parents, and she could tell the parents, tough break, I'm sorry, I had a deal. You don't want to go? You don't have to go, but you have to pay me like a poel batel. What's a poel batel? Well, you know what? I'm not so interested in taking care of your kids. I'm not so interested in putting them to sleep. I'm not so interested in brushing their teeth, and I don't want to hear them cry. So it's worth it for me to be at home for somewhere in the middle, the half price, and that's the Cohen's obligation at that time. Now, if the Cohen's want to be good people, and if Sarah wants to be a good person, a concept in Choshe Mishpah that often comes up, something called Lefnim Mishur Asadin, that we try to go above and beyond the letter of the law. And I could tell you from getting such Shilas that more often than not, people are not so legalistic and they try to do the right thing. The Cohens will take care of Sarah, and Sarah herself will probably try to find another babysitter for the Cohens, or if she can't, she recognizes that even though she has a legal loophole and she doesn't have to necessarily come, if it's not going to cause a financial harm, the best thing to do is to stay out of the situation and to come up with a way, a pshara, where everybody's able to work together.
What if there's an onus where, like, the child is sick?
Good question.
And the parents have to stay home.
Good question. I didn't deal with onus at all, but onus plays a very, very crucial role in halacha of Sechiras Poem. It's a simon in and of itself, following simon shinlam. I think it's simon shinlam medalet. Ones rachmana patre, and the same thing is true when it comes to an employee. If an employee has a death in the family, or if an employee gets sick. Now, more often than not, in this country, we have understandings, or there are contracts, or there are legalities in terms of sick days, or a pension and pay and the like. If you're dealing in a society where that exists, then the question doesn't really exist, because you get sick days and you get, bereavement days, and there are a variety of other days that are implemented into the contract. But if that doesn't exist, so then yes, the halacha is that an ones patters you from the requirement that you have. So in either situation, if there's an agreement that Sarah makes to her employers, and for whatever reason something comes up in the family that does not allow her to be there, and it's an onus that neither party was prepared for, then Sarah's pater. If it's an onus that both parties were prepared for, and the consequences were out there, and it was potential that everybody knew what could happen, and everybody still agreed, then the onus is not going to pater them. But if it's something that comes up out of the whim, and nobody knows about it, in that circumstance, then yes, an onus would indeed pater.
That's the first sif.
Yeah, but I didn't get it. I didn't get so involved in onus. But yes, your question is 100% Shlomo. Onus is very, very much a part of it. Let's finish with the second case, and we'll try to conclude with this. Shimon verbally agrees to take a job working for Levi. Shortly before beginning employment, Shimon realizes that he's not interested in the job. Is Shimon permitted to back out? So how do we analyze this? Simply, again, this is an employee backing out on the employer. Now, it's only a verbal agreement, so a verbal agreement then halacha only carries weight if it's going to cause financial harm to the employer. So if this is going to cause financial harm to the employer, again, if he has the ability or the opportunity to hire somebody else, he should hire somebody else. If he can hire somebody else, the only way to hire somebody else is at a higher price, he can charge Shimon the difference between the second employee and Shimon's original price. Or if he can't even do that, and Shimon is so intrinsic to the success of his business that day or that week or that month or that year, he could fool Shimon into coming to work based upon offering him a higher deal. That's the legal action that Shimon has if he's that Levi has if Shimon backs out. What about the opposite way? If the employer backs out on the employee, soon after being hiring Shimon, Levi hears a rumor that Shimon is not trustworthy. Is Levi permitted to back out of his commitment to Shimon? So this case is different than the other three cases because here there is a fact, or however you want to define a rumor, but there is word out there that the employee that you just hired is somebody that really is not a good idea to hire. Now, are there any infractions at this point that the owner has by not giving the employee the job? Because I have something on him now. I hear or I understand that you're not trustworthy. I don't know if you steal, or I don't know if you cut out of work early, or I don't know if you're not an honest person, but that's different than all the other cases. When Sarah doesn't come to work, she doesn't come to work because it's her friend. But here, when the employer backs out, the employer backs out on the employee because of a fact that is different. So if you take a look in the last source, it's an Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan says that here, the employer is not held accountable whatsoever, and you can't even have a taina. Can't have a taromes on the employer for backing out. Why? Because take a look in the three last lines on the third source sheet. Let's say at the end of the day, the balabais, the owner, no longer requires the services of a particular employee. Something comes up, the business model changes, and he no longer needs this particular employee. Or these employees aren't working properly. They're cutting out of work early. Or they're taking too many snow days and they're not coming into work. The employee has no complaint against the employer. And the employer is not considered to be a person who's not trustworthy. You're going back in his word. Or if the employee backs out on the employer because of a particular circumstance. Sarah hears that to work for the Cohens is terrible. They don't pay on time and they don't treat him properly. The air conditioning is not on when they're babysitting. And she gets that information from a different babysitter. Sarah has no, the Kohens have no complaint against her. This is what the Aruch HaShulchan paskins, this is what the Sma paskins, the Ktsos paskins, what the Ktsos calls a Taina Rabba. Anytime the employer or the employee has a significant reason to back out, what's significant? So it's going to depend upon the particular situation. But if you find out that you hire somebody who is a cheat, or if the employee hears that the employer is a terrible person to work for as a result of his inappropriate behavior, either the language or the working environment is terrible and is vulgar, in that particular situation, either the employer can back out on the employee or the employee can back out on the employer as a result of the facts that now became recognizable. And in this situation, not only is there nothing financially binding against the employer to the employee or the employee to the employer, but there's not even a taromes, there's not a mechaser amana. So this is the sugya in front of us. Again, there are many, many different variety of shailas that come up. But I think what we should walk away with this is, number one, is appreciating the significance of a word. And a verbal commitment, although it's not legally binding, not financially binding, it certainly has infractions. It's a taromis. It's called mechaser amana. It's called being mishana das. We don't treat words lightly. So if you make a verbal agreement with somebody else, take it seriously and don't just think that because there's no kinyan, there's no paperwork, and there's no transaction, or if I didn't go to the workplace, or if I didn't head out yet, that it's not binding. It's binding vis-a-vis the fact that I'm not an honest person, I don't take my word seriously, and that's inappropriate. But financially, it's not binding unless there is a financial loss either to the employer or to the employee. And in that situation, it depends. The employer can take the employee to task by tricking him and paying him a higher price and then not paying him a higher price, or he can hire somebody else for a higher price. And the other way, if the employer decides to back out on the employee, and the employee, that causes the employee a financial loss, the employee is permitted to take what's called a schar of a poel batel, of not working for that afternoon, what that would cost him. If there are any questions, I'm happy to address them. Shkoach for coming.